Parshas Bishalach begins with Bnei Yisrael leaving Mitzrayim and then mysteriously being told to go back. Lifnei Baal Tzifon, in front of Baal Tzifon, and Rashi explains that Baal Tzifon was the only remaining idol in Mitzrayim after the destruction that came around with the Makos. And therefore, the purpose of having Baal Tzifon present was to trick the Mitzrim. Rav Volbi, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, explains that when one is predetermined to sin, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the person the opportunity. Azay Zakti Gemara in Avodah Zarah, by the way. That's what the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah. When one is predetermined to sin, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives him Habala Tame Misayin Oso. When somebody is going to be Metame himself, so we give him that opportunity. There are always alternative explanations available to somebody who wants to deny Hashem's hand in the world. All we have to do is wake up and realize that there are also ways to be metar. Habal etar misayinu. So if you look for the hand of God, you shall find it. Rav Volbi explains this idea of how kinna, taiva, and kavod are all motziyin as ha'adam in ha'olam. You see, the fact of the matter is that when kinna, taiva, and kavod are an ends in of themselves, when desire, jealousy, and honor are means or goals in one's life alone, so then, quite honestly, they take a person out of this world. However, there are times where each, where kinna can bring about kinna sofrim, which is, of course, a means whereby we expand chachma and therefore expand God's involvement in the world. Taiva, of course, is there not as an end, but rather as a means to raise the next generation. And kavod for talmidei chachamim, for parents, for previous generations, are all appropriate uses for tools. But when each one is used as an end, it's like Baal Tzifon. It destroys a person. It becomes an idol to be worshipped instead of a means of recognizing the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the sovereign in the world. Anyway, Bnei Yisrael get the Mitzrim to start following them, Bnei Mitzrayim Noseach Areim, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin notes that at that point, Lo Karav Zel Zeh Kol Halayla, they didn't come close to one another. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Tes Amud Beis, notes that at that point the Malachim wanted to sing Shira. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu thundered back to them, Masa Yadai Tovim Bayam, my handiwork is drowning in the sea, Va'atem Omrim Shira, and you want to go ahead and sing a Shira? So if that's the case, the question has to be raised, why would God allow Bnei Yisrael to sing Shira when their enemies fall? The late great Rav Gedalia Silverstone, who was a Rav in Washington and originally at one point the original Rav of Kesher Israel in Washington, D.C., notes that those who were not there cannot properly express Shira. That is to say, by being present in the situation of the Galus, then one is able to go ahead and sing the Shira upon redemption. In other words, when a person goes through a trial or a tribulation, their Shira is not on the death of the enemy. It's not on the fact that the oppressor has been killed, but rather it's on the Geulaseinu Upadus Nafshenu. It's on the fact that we have been redeemed. This doesn't make HaKadosh Baruch Hu happy, but when HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees our enemies dead, that's not what makes him happy, or so it seems from the Gemara Megillah and Daf Yud Amud Beis. The real Shira is the fact that we've been saved. Geulaseinu Upadus Nafshenu. And that's why we say in the Az Yashir itself, Aziv is Zimras Ka, it's my strength and the praise that I sing to Hashem, Vayhi Li, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was for me, Li Yeshuva, for salvation. The show of strength is a jump start for me, and what I choose to do with it in terms of moving on once I've already received my opportunity for Yeshua, for salvation. Anyway, we get to the point where the waters are split. Now, when we start thinking about Kriyas Yamsuf, and we talk about it as though it's one of the most amazing miracles of all time, one needs to stop and ask, hey, look, obviously splitting a sea is an amazing thing, but why was it such an unbelievable experience? After all, God created the ocean, so certainly He can split it. What's added by the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf? So in His introduction to His Sefer Minchas Asher on Masechet Pesachim, Rav Asher Weiss Shalita, Agona Rav Asher Weiss Shalita, answers with the following parable. He tells the story of a master sculptor who once fashioned a sculpture of a horse. whose detail was so magnificent that he wanted the community to see it and praise his sculpting ability. The sculptor took the horse and brought it to town and tied it among the other horses. He sat by it for a full day, and he discovered that nobody listened or paid any attention to it. So you can imagine, when he came home, he was quite dejected. His children and his wife tried to cheer him up by explaining to him that the work was so exquisite, everyone took it for granted that indeed it was a real horse, not just a wondrous sculpture. And this proved just how gifted a sculptor he truly was. Nobody bothered. The man decided to put his family's theory to the test, and he cut his sculpture in half in the town square in order to see if the people would notice. The fact of the matter is, Rav Asher Weiss says the same thing is true about Kriyas Yamsuf as well. Sometimes we become so used to nature, to the fact that the ocean has been split, that it's the disruption of the nature that reminds us how amazing nature is. And thus, the great miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf is shadowed by the fact that God created the Yam. But then again, on the other side of it, it reminds us HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the one who created nature, and so therefore he has the power to disrupt it, bringing us an appreciation for the nature itself. We're sitting here in the midst of a storm that has affected the east coast of the United States, at least the upper east coast, the northeast. Quite honestly, the threat of the impending storm has reminded us just quite honestly how amazing the Yad Hashem can be, and the fact that he controls the nature and controls exactly how the nature tends to flow and where it tends to go. And so after the Nes of Kriyas Yamsuf, B'nai Yisrael come to Marah. V'lo yachlu lishtos mayim mimarah ki marim heim. They couldn't drink the water in Marah because they were bitter. One of the most amazing comments of all time, the Kotzker Rebbe turns around and comments that here, ki marim heim is a reference to the people, not the water. Because when somebody is bitter himself, everything tastes bitter as well. I can't state that comment without noting enough how relevant this simple comment of the Kotzker is in all of our lives. The way we choose to look at something is the way it is seen. And when we are feeling miserable, everything around us is miserable. Quite honestly, the bitterness that exists within ourselves leads to expanded bitterness in the world around us. And so therefore, Shem Sam Lo Choku Mishpat V'Sham Niso, in Marah, where God took the bitter waters and sweetened them, there he also established Choku Mishpat. And Rashi explains, based on the Gemara, that Hashem taught them certain mitzvos that they were going to be responsible for. And Rashi enumerates them, Shabbos, Parah, Duma, and Dinim. You know, the great Rabar Chalevi Epstein, the author of the Torah Temima, challenges the idea that Parah Aduma was intended over here. He thinks that perhaps there was a printer's error, and what should be here is not Pei Aleph, which stands for Parah Aduma, but rather Chaf Aleph, and what should have been here was Kibud Av. But the question has to be raised, where do you find the concepts of Chok and Mishpat within Kibud Av, Shabbos, and Dinim? So Rav Schlesinger, the famous Rav of Gilo, explains that Shabbos is both Zecher L'Masa Bereishis and Zecher L'Yitzias Mitzrayim. That Shabbos is part of Ma'aseh Bereishis means that it's a chok. It precedes any reason to rest. But as a Zecher to the slavery, it's a reminder. And thus, it is a Mishpat. As far as Kibud Av V'Aim is concerned, there is Choku Mishpat, because Sefer Achinach notes that the reason why we do Kibud Av is Hakaras HaTov, which seems to assume that there's Mishpat, there's justice in the process of Kibud Av. But the Gemara says that, look, if you look at the storyline, you know that when Dama ben Nesina, the non-Jew who refused to wake up his father and was rewarded with a Parah Aduma, the fact that Parah Aduma was the Mida Keneged Mida seems to suggest that there is a chok aspect even to such a logical mitzvah like Kibud Av V'Aim. We do it. We don't know the reason for doing it, right? We just do it anyway. Azai, that's called chok. And finally, Dinim has both aspects of Chok and Mishpat to it, because Rashi in Sanhedrin on Daf Nun Vav notes that Dine Knossos, the rules of punishment, of Knas, of penalty, appear in Mara as a Chok, says, and this is Rashi's comment in Sanhedrin. But the rest of Dinim are Mishpatim. So thus, all three lessons that were taught to in Mara share the duality of, on the one hand, being Chok at their core, and at the same time being Mishpat at their core as well. Later on, we read about Parshas HaMan. And in the regard to the Man, we're told, Hayom lo simsa'u basada, that on Shabbos itself, you will not find it in the field. The Beis Yisrael of Ger would often stop his chassidim and ask them on Shabbos, so where did you eat today? And it was incumbent for the chassid to understand his words. You see, the Beis Yisrael wanted his chassidim to understand that Shabbos is Hayom LaHashem. Today is totally Kadosh. And on a day like today, being Shabbos, where there's so much Kedusha around you, you need to grab every ounce you can. Hayom, Echluhu Hayom. Eat the Kedusha today. Consume it. Because Hayom lo simsa'u basada, today, what you find today in the world around you, you will not find in all the rest of the days of the week. The parasha ends with the story of Amalek, and Rav Chaim Sabato Shalita notes the incredible breadth of the parasha that rests upon one symbol, and that is the symbol of the Yad, of the hand. The beginning of the parasha begins with the Yad HaGdola, and yet at the end, it ends with Parsha Saman and the Battle of Amalek. And Rav Sabato explains that the Battle of Amalek teaches a valuable lesson in the way that Bnei Yisrael go to war. While Moshe Rabbeinu's hands are up in the air, they're not miraculously the hands that win or lose the war. A battle still has to be waged down below by Yahushua and the army. But rather, in the new reality, Hashem wanted to fight in the midst of the Jewish people, not instead of the Jewish people. The hands of Moshe alone do not make or break the battle, as in the future, taking an Aron into battle and alone will also not make or break the war. An Aron can also be seized. Instead, it's those hands of Moshe that serve as inspiration for soldiers to remember for whom they fought, and to be aware that Hashem was to be with him. This was a new reality that involved taking personal achrayus together with the involvement of Hashem. That's the way the world is meant to function post-Yitzias Mitzrayim. That's the way the world is meant to function, especially in today's perilous times. Finally, the Haftorah deals with the famous story of Devorah HaNeviah and her Shira as well. And in the context of the Shira, we're told, Yifchar Elokim Chadashim, that they will choose Elokim Chadashim, new gods, which is generally, on a simple level of interpretation, a reference to Avodah Zarah, but the Alkut Shimoni adds an additional level of interpretation that the word to be used is Elokim, Elokim Chadashim, that this is a Shem Kodesh, that Hashem loves new Chidushei Torah. But Mari V'Rabbi Rav Shechta used to always quote his Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, who explains that there's a difference between a chiddush and a shinui, a nuance and a change. You see, sometimes we can have wonderful chidushim, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves, but unfortunately we overstep those boundaries of the religion through the power of chidush. Rav Soloveitchik noted that like Rosh Chodesh, which also involves a chiddush, We need to turn around and check that chiddush by going to ask the Sanhedrin. This will help us determine if we're making something as a chiddush or whether what we're doing is a shinui. We live in a world today where everybody has chiddushim, but where a person needs to understand that which is chadash has to be checked with those who are yishanim to make sure that which is desired is something that's appreciated by Hashem, not, God forbid, against that which is all that HaKadosh Baruch Hu stands for. Shabbat Shalom to all.